Hello and welcome to Popcorn Mumbles, the podcast where we dig into the back catalog to select a film or television show to rewatch. I'm your host, Cody Nestor. Alongside me is my co-host, Todd Heal.
What's going on, guys?
If you enjoy the show, please consider following us on your podcast platform of choice and subscribing to our YouTube channel. This week, we have chosen the 2022 film Violent Night. An elite team of mercenaries breaks into a family compound on Christmas Eve, taking everyone hostage inside. However, they aren't prepared for a surprise combatant. Santa Claus is on the grounds, and he's about to show why this Nick is no saint. Violent Night was released on December 2nd, 2022. On a budget of $20 million, it made $70 million. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 73% and an audience score of 88%. So, Todd, let's discuss Violent Night. Spoilers are ahead. Todd, as always, I'll turn it over to you. Where do you want to start here?
I was watching this movie, and this is a sum of a lot of other movies' parts.
It's a little Home Alone.
It's a little Die Hard and Die Hard 2.
True, yes.
You can even maybe draw a little bit of a First Blood reference in there, maybe.
Yes, yep, I can see that as well. It's a lot of things, like you said, yeah. It surprised me in how... It's not the best thing ever, but it just surprised me in how much I enjoyed it.
Me too.
I didn't have a lot of expectations for it.
I didn't either.
I figured it would probably be mediocre at best, and I can say it's definitely better than mediocre. It's that in that decent to good range, I think, not to get ahead of ourselves here. But, I mean, obviously, to start off, you've got David Harbour as Santa. So, Todd, what did you think about David Harbour, his performance as Santa
here? I thought he did a pretty good job here. You know, I don't have anything against David Harbour outside of maybe that one Hellboy movie that's kind of meh.
I never finished it. I couldn't get all the way through it.
You know, I've enjoyed most of David Harbour's efforts, and I thought he did a pretty good job as jolly old Santa. I mean, not so jolly.
Not so jolly.
Not as Santa Claus.
More here. Disillusioned and grumpy.
Yeah, kind of burned out on his job here.
Yeah, Christmas has got too commercial. Kids are too greedy. I think there's something he says later on that they just crave and consume. And Santa's definitely a little disillusioned here and likes a little drinky. A little drinky poo.
Yeah, likes to knock a few back.
Yeah, likes a little drinky poo. I'm going to do a wrap around. wrap around. You know, that kind of stuff. What's our plot here, Todd?
So basically, we've got the Lightstone family. We have a son, Jason, kind of his estranged wife, Linda, and their daughter, Trudy. Mm. And they're kind of heading off to his mother's house, which, like I say, is a big compound. This is a big well-to-do family. Jason also has a sister. I think her name was Alva. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was her boyfriend or fiance. He's Morgan Steele.
Yeah.
He's an action film star. they have a son, Bert, who's like a, you know... social media podcaster type guy. We love him. No, I'm just kidding. you have Gertrude, which is played by Beverly D'Angelo. She's like the head of the family.
Yeah, I didn't really look at the cast for this film. The only person I knew it was David Harbour. I was like, hey, it's Beverly D'Angelo. Haven't seen her in a long time.
Had some work done.
Definitely
man.
had a little work done. Everybody gets older, but... definitely had a little bit of.
So basically, they're at their compound having their family Christmas get together, and they get set upon by a bunch of robbers, out to take the family fortune.
Yeah, basically our main antagonist is Scrooge, played by John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
All of our little gang henchmen, they all have kind of holiday. Theme names,
right.
Ones like Frosty, and I forget all the names right off. But basically, John Leguizamo has learned that $300 million has been transferred into the custody of the Lightstone family. It was supposed to be money that was used, I guess, overseas in the war on terror, but it'd be kind of misappropriated and deemed lost by some tricky financing done by Beverly D'Angelo. And she was now in possession of $300 million that he is set to steal.
It's in a vault on the grounds that they got to break into.
Yes.
Die Hard.
Die
anyone?
Hard. Exactly. Die Hard. There's a subplot here. Jason Lightstone. He's tired of kind of living under his mother's thumb. It's caused him to be estranged from his wife and estranged a little bit from his daughter Trudy. They're not. Him and his wife are not together anymore. You've got that kind of. little bit of cliche Christmas time story, which is the kids' Christmas wishes. I just wish my family could be a family again, you know, type of thing. So there's a little subplot of Jason has done something, and you don't really know at the beginning exactly what, but he's kind of telling his wife, you know, what if we didn't have to live under my mom's thumb anymore? What if we could just go somewhere and be a family again and get out from under the rest of the crazy Lightstone family that I have to deal with, basically. Right. I don't want to run the company. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want my mom lording over me all the time. Like, what if it can be different, basically, is kind of a little bit of his motivation. We see he kind of brings in a Christmas gift that he kind of leaves away from, like, kind of everything else, puts it toward the back of the tree.
You don't want to draw any kind of attention to it.
Exactly. And then, of course, we have David Harbour, our Santa Claus. He starts off, first time we see him in the film, the real David Harbour Santa is talking to a fake Santa in a bar. Immediately leaves, gets in his sleigh, takes to the skies, and immediately pukes on the bartender.
Yeah, some lady's looking up at, like, the magic-looking sleigh flying away, and she's like, and he gets, like, a mouthful of puke.
But basically, it's a case of wrong place, wrong time, a little John McClane.
Yeah.
It's wrong place, wrong time. Santa Claus is delivering presents to, to Trudy at the Lightstone Mansion, and at the same time that Scrooge and his little minions decide to break in to try to rob the place. And then from there, it becomes Die Hard, and then it moves into a little bit of Home Alone, and then a little Die Hard 2, and then a little back to Die Hard 1, and then it's over.
That's it.
I mean, that's really what it is. But
it kind of works.
It does kind of work. And in the middle of that is some kind of fun holiday themed action and kills.
Right.
I have a note about it later. There's a little at points. There's some good action scenes. I think the action is decent to good here. There's some good scenes, and then there's the scene in the barn later where you kind of see Santa kind of muster up his strength and find his weapon and that kind of thing. And there's a lot of a little bit too much of that. I'm not gonna shoot you. I'm gonna run at you with my gun. Type action.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? That, like, and a little bit of that. The next guy waiting around to be punched while the other guy is currently being punched. Type action.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that that I wish was cleaned up a little bit better. But there's some solid stuff. There's a fight scene between Santa and one of the holiday villains here in the game room that I thought was done really well.
The star in the eye.
Yes, that was the star in the eye. Yes, there's another one that is dispatched kind of almost accidentally that falls and is impaled on an ice spike outside.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some decent kind of stuff here, some decent kills, really. How did you feel about the rest of the cast? I mean, we've got Harbour, you got Beverly D'Angelo, like, anybody that kind of stands out to you? What did you think about the little girl?
I thought the little girl that played Trudy, I thought she did a good job just being that, you know, just innocent, wide-eyed kind of, you know, still believing in Saint Nick kind of kid.
Right. Everybody kind of plays their part well. The sister's kind of money grubby,
trying to suck up to the mom.
Yeah, her boyfriend is just there to suck up to the mom so that she finances his next film.
That's like his present to her is like, you know, the layout for the movie or something.
Yeah, it's like a pitch packet.
Yeah, the pitch
like,
packet.
Here's the pitch of my new film. My gift to you is allowing you to give me money for my film.
You're right.
Basically. Bert, just from the time we meet Bert, he's just completely obnoxious little shit.
Yeah.
Just completely consumed with social media clout and those kind of things. Everybody pretty much plays their part to a T. I noticed the guy that's he's kind of the one of the henchmen that kind of stays with the family the most, kind of the long-haired bearded guy.
I think they called him Krampus.
I think you're right. He might have been called Krampus. I remember that guy from. Do you remember him from the Freddy versus Jason?
He was the kid that got killed in the bathtub, right? I think one of Freddy's only kills movie.
I think he was. Wasn't he supposed to be the brother of the guy Freddy puppeted or something in Friday the 13th, not Friday the 13th, in Nightmare on Elm Street 3? I think it was. That was the one that was set at like the asylum kind of, right, or the nut house, right, or whatever. I think his brother was supposed to be the one he puppeted or something like that. And I just remember that. I was like, hey, that's that guy.
That's exactly where I remembered you from.
Yeah, from Freddy versus Jason. Yeah. I remember you, guy. Is there a favorite kill that stands out for you here, Todd?
It's one we already touched on, but I really like that little game room tussle with the Christmas star to the eye.
Yeah, he puts a Christmas star. Santa puts a Christmas star in the guy's eye. Does he plug it up after?
I think he plugs it up, and it kind of winds up electrocuting him,
sparking his face and sparking his eye and, like, just lighting his head on fire, basically. I think... I don't even know if it's a kill. That's not my favorite. My favorite moment in the whole film. So, like, when it becomes Home Alone. So, a little bit of the backstory. So, Trudy, the little girl, she's kind of a little bit bummed out at the beginning of the film because her dad, Jason, didn't take her to see Santa before Christmas. So, Santa has no idea what she wants for Christmas. So, to kind of circumvent this and make up for it, he goes in to like the closet at the Lightstone Manor, his childhood home, and finds an old walkie-talkie he used to use. He gives it to her and tells her it's a magical walkie-talkie that's going to allow you to kind of talk with Santa. Now, Santa may not talk back because he's real busy tonight delivering toys around the world, but he'll hear you when you talk.
Yeah.
So the premise of that work becomes a little bit Home Alone too, and a little bit Die Hard, is that she is using that walkie-talkie because Santa takes out some bad guys. He gets a hold of a walkie-talkie a la John McClane and ends up being able to communicate with her through her actual walkie-talkie. So she's kind of walking Santa through stuff, telling him what's up. He's telling her where to hide. And at one point, he tells her to hide in the attic, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's what gives my favorite moment in the film is the two, I think one of them's name is Bjorn, and the girl, the female,
The
female, like, team member, the female bad guy, they try to go after her in the attic, and they notice, like, on the floor that she's left a booby trap of, like, I don't know, it's like a
nail sticking.
It's like a roofing shingle or like a pad with like a bunch of nails tacked in it. And they're kind of like, how stupid do you think we are, kid? Like, this is like, you just left us here. Obviously, we can see it. They don't know. The guy, Bjorn, starts climbing the ladder. They don't know that she's also booby trapped the ladder and like sawed one of the pegs of the ladder, the steps of the ladder almost in half. And that dude hits that step and falls down and like jets a nail
right up through his
chin. That was my favorite moment is like when it turns into violent Home Alone and then he falls on his ass into that bed of nails.
Yeah.
The girl upstairs, I think she ends up like sticking her in some kind of like glue trap thing.
She's part of her scalp ripped off.
Hits her in the face. I think one of them gets hit in the face with a bowling ball.
Yeah.
Like it's just all really good stuff. It's like if Home Alone were like violent, that's what this was. And it was just, I don't know. It was just really good gags. I thought that was like my favorite part of
it. It was really good. It was well done.
Yeah, I mean, it was like all of it's executed kind of really, really well. And like I said, that was my favorite part of the whole film is her doing the booby trap and the violent Home Alones. And it's just
Home Alone was R-rated.
Exactly. If Home Alone was R-rated, I just imagine Joe Pesci and I forget the other guy's name. I can never remember his name. I just imagine them as the Wet Bandits, having the same fate come of them, it all works well. Like I said, it's surprisingly all this stuff works fairly well. So tell us about the double cross here, Todd. So Beverly D'Angelo, and that she kind of sets up that by Leguizamo locking down the place, killing security.
It's alerted like a strike team,
a kill squad,
and they're en route there, and they're going to wipe them out.
Yeah, they're going to kill John Leguizamo, kill his team. But lo and behold, the semi-twist of the film is that the kill team commander and the kill team are also in on the plot.
Right.
They're going to share in the wealth of the $300 million that they expect to earn from stealing from the Lightstone family. And the first person they kill is, what was it? What was his name? Max Steele? Not Max Steele. But,
Morgan Steele.
Morgan Steele. Max Steele is the action figure. He breaks out. He jumps out of a window.
Yeah.
He runs away, and they just immediately mow him down. And then from there, it's pretty much, you know, your third act. There's a really good scene with Santa in the barn that we kind of mentioned. That's where it's a little bit, you know, hang back while I punch this other guy. Now you charge me with your gun and don't shoot at me.
Santa slings a mean sledge.
Yeah, exactly. We get set up before we learn a little bit more about Santa's backstory, that he was Nickamon the Red.
Yeah.
And he wielded a big hammer called Skullcrusher. Mm-hmm. So his weapon of choice that he finds in the barn is a big sledgehammer. He also uses a candy cane that he sharpens into a kind of a candy cane shank.
Yeah,
which is also very effective. But really, the third act is just Santa continuing to pick those people off, the kill squad. And then it kind of ends up with the family being the family at one point kind of band together. It's like the mom, I think the sister,
the estranged wife.
Right. They kind of band together and overpower Freddy versus Jason guy and kill him and take his weapon. And then it's just kind of the family versus the rest of the hit squad kind of at the end. But John Leguizamo and the kill squad commander end up taking off on some snowmobiles.
Yeah.
Heading to try to basically get away. Because once they crack the vault, there's no money in it, in the vault.
It's empty.
Yeah, so the reason that the present that Jason had brought and the reason that he was kind of telling his wife that we can maybe go off and do our own thing is because before, he was the one that kind of intercepted, and he was planning on stealing the money and taking it from his mother himself, and he had already moved the money out of the vault to... He had hid it.
It was outside in the yard under a nativity, right?
Yeah, it was under some hay bales. He had hid it, and his plan was to go to the Christmas party, leave with the money, and then his mother would sometime tomorrow find a present with some, I think, whiskey in it and a note pretty much saying, fuck you, I took your money, I'm gone.
Right.
You know, I'm going to live my life, and I stole $300 million from you that you can't report because you stole it from the U.S. government as well. So I win kind of thing. And then it's pretty much we kind of lead up to our kind of last big fight between some of the family members and John Leguizamo and Santa. You want to take us through what happens there?
So they kind of wind up, it's like a little cabin in the woods, like a little house in the woods.
Yeah, like a little abandoned, little building or cabin in the woods, yeah.
And I think John Leguizamo, he finally gets his hand on Harbor had used his scroll throughout the film. He would pull it open and it would tell him somebody was naughty, somebody was nice.
Right.
And, you know, he saw his name on there and all the shit he had done all through the years. And, you know, he was like, well, you know what? If you are Santa and you are the real deal, I want to end this shit forever.
Right.
Christmas dies tonight. Something like that.
What is this, Halloween Kills? Yeah. Christmas dies tonight.
And so they have their big tussle, and, you know, Santa takes some pretty big injuries right here. He's near death, if not dying, right there at the end.
Yeah, he manages to dispatch John Leguizamo, and I didn't really see it coming, but I guess I should have thought about it. There's a part where they end up near a chimney, and it's kind of set up through the film that, you know, Santa obviously travels into the home and can travel through chimneys with his Santa nose magic.
Laying his finger aside his nose.
Exactly. So he dispatches John Leguizamo's Scrooge by traveling with him, you know, taking him and traveling him through the chimney and basically tearing him in half into pieces.
Santa makes the trip. John Leguizamo's body does not.
Exactly. He's just basically a stump of a torso by the end of it. I think Beverly D'Angelo ends up killing the commander, I think. Doesn't she end up shooting him in the head?
I think she shoots him, yeah.
And then we pretty much get our Santa's dying. Santa's going to die moment, but through the power of belief,
he's back.
The family finally believing in the spirit of Christmas, Santa is resurrected once more, and we kind of get our happy ending here, Todd.
The sleigh and the reindeer show back up, and all is well.
Yeah, there was a gag before about him stepping in reindeer shit, which was funny. Just some notes here that I was making as I went through the film. The little girl references Home Alone and calls her dad a filthy animal at one point.
I didn't catch it. That's
cool. That was early on, yeah. Cheap people apparently leave vanilla wafers for Santa instead of real cookies. Again, this was a very typical I want my family to be a family again storyline. When Scrooge and his gang find the ice-spiked body, I wanted him to rub his eyes and just say, looks like we're doing a Christmas Die Hard. The game room fight that we mentioned is great. The bad guys put Jason's finger in a nutcracker and, like, crack his finger before threatening to also do the same to his balls.
Yeah. Yikes.
You were mentioning before a little bit of Rambo. Santa stitches himself up like Rambo at one point. He takes a knife swipe or injury of some sort and uses a needle and thread to kind of sew himself up a la Rambo First Blood, where he sews up his arm. The candy cane shank, the ice skate gloves he uses at one point, and the stocking stuffer grenade, all really cool gags and good kills. We mentioned this becomes violent Home Alone. And let's see, what's my last one here? Pretty much, really what I can say is that if you can buy into the premise here and you can get past some of the little bit of schlock that's here, there's a lot of fun to kind of be had with this
film. There's fun to be had with this movie, yeah.
Exactly. You want some Santa bits, Todd?
Santa bits.
I got you some Santa bits here. So the logo on the catering company van is called Farkas and Deal after the bullies in A Christmas Story.
Nice.
When checking on Trudy Lightstone, Santa finds her on the nice list. Her list includes kept room clean, listens to parents, kind to animals, sweet to everyone, and invited weird kid to party.
Good for you, Trudy.
Morgan Steele, we mentioned him before, is based on Mark Wahlberg. Like Wahlberg, Steele stars in several films about the military, and he says he could have stopped the hijackers on 9/11 had he been aboard the plane, a claim Wahlberg made and apologized for in 2012.
Damn, okay.
Scrooge asks Santa Claus, "All right, who the hell are you really, huh? Some security guard who's watched too many action flicks," which echoes Hans Gruber's question to John McClane in Die Hard, "You know my name, but who are you? Just another American who saw too many movies as a child."
Ah.
Amazon delivers the boxes instead of Santa. Note that the smiles are all upside down to mimic a sad face.
I noticed that. I caught that.
Note the window in the attic Trudy looks out of. It's the same one Caesar looks out of in James Franco's house in Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Whoa.
And my last Santa bit for you here, Todd. After Santa Claus, David Harbour takes out some of the insurgents, John Leguizamo asks whether the protagonist could be a small-town cop with five kids, a reference to Harbour's character Chief Hopper in Stranger Things.
Nice.
Anything you want to go into before we get into our review here, Todd?
I think I'm good, boss man.
So we rank films on a 1 to 10 scale, starting from 1. The ranks are torture, 2 awful, 3 sad, 4 subpar, 5 mediocre, 6 decent, 7 good, 8 great, 9 amazing, and 10 masterpiece. Todd, give us your final thoughts and review score for Violent Night.
I've been aware of this movie since its release. I just never took the time to watch it. And now after seeing it, I'm glad I did. It's kind of crazy to have a movie with this level of violence that also pulls off some heart and Christmas cheer. There's no debating whether this action flick is a Christmas movie, though, because Santa's front and center, drinking, puking, and bashing skulls. I give Violent Night 7 skulls a splitting, which on our scale is good.
Nice. Any chance you'd add this film to your yearly holiday watch list, Todd?
I could honestly see it working its way on there. I had that much of a kind of a kick out of watching it.
Gotcha.
It would be near the bottom, I'll be honest, but yeah. I could see it going in the rotation.
It would never replace a Home Alone or a Christmas Vacation or something like
right.
that. But I could see it being on a yearly watch list for sure. Todd, if you were casting for a Easter thriller film, maybe it was called An Excellent Day to Die.
Yeah.
Who would you cast as the Easter Bunny?
Jason Statham.
He's a beekeeper now, though. For me, when it comes to Violent Night, I'm in complete agreement with you. Like I said, I got a lot more enjoyment out of this than I thought. It was something when I saw it when it was first released. It looked interesting. Like I said, if you can buy into the premise and get past a little bit of the schlock, and like I said, some of the action is a little too much waiting for the next guy before I hit him and running at me with, you know, without shooting me kind of thing with your gun drawn. If you get past some of that stuff, like there's some fun to be had here. I give Violent Night a 6 out of 10, which ranks it as decent. Todd, tell everyone how they can find us and stay up to date with us on social media.
We're at Towel Capes on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Towel Capes Podcast on Facebook. You can also email us at towelcapespod@gmail.com.
Also, if you're so obliged, leave me a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. Really helps the show. Popcorn Mumbles will return next week. We want to thank you so much for listening. Until next time, bye, guys.
Later, guys.